Basically, the eastern US and the northwestern US are areas where there's high humidity. And basically, in the case of which is it's just good, you know, because we have enough water typically to produce hay, right? So, but it can be a problem when you have to store it, right? So, and that's basically where my research at University of Maine has focused. Basically, is okay, what can we do to expand our understanding of hay production so we can develop novel technologies to be able to mitigate these issues while, you know, keeping the profitability and maybe improving the return of investment that producers may have to spend when purchasing preservatives.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost gut health, performance, and profitability with Digestrum Prime, a phytogenic feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in dairy calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime.
With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com.
Lalamond Animal Nutrition, partnering in microbial solutions for a changing world.
Well, welcome everybody to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm your host for today, Gail Carpenter with Iowa State University Extension. I'm joined today by Dr. Juan Romero from the University of Maine. Dr. Romero is an associate professor of forage science and dairy cattle nutrition at the University of Maine. He seeks to expand our understanding of the factors that affect forage quality and conservation and develop novel strategies that can increase the profitability of farmers. Specifically, his research program is working to optimize the use of hay and silage preservatives and to develop additives and management practices that can decrease PFAS contamination in livestock systems. Dr. Romero earned his Bachelor of Science degree in Animal Science at the National Agrarian University in Lima, Peru, and both his Master's and PhD in Animal Sciences with an emphasis in ruminant nutrition at the University of Florida. His postdoc experience is in forage science and was completed at North Carolina State University. Dr. Romero, welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show.
Thanks, Gail. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So you went from Florida to North Carolina to Maine.
Yes.
You just made like a constant northward, and there's not much farther north you can go now that you're in Maine.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, I have been exposed to the whole range, I guess, of environments that you can have in the eastern U.S. It has been very interesting. Yes. Peru's basically the place where I studied and live in Peru is close to what you will observe in California, right? So kind of like arid environment, Mediterranean, next to the ocean, right? So yeah, so basically that's, you know, those are the environments I have been exposed to.
So what are some similarities in, those are all like kind of humid environments, right? Because you got the ocean there. I know Florida, I was just in Florida for ADSA this summer. It was sticky. I don't like humidity, and forages don't necessarily like humidity either. So is that a common issue that you see from Florida up the coast?
Yes, indeed. So basically the eastern US and the northwestern US are areas where there's high humidity. And basically in the case of, which is, it's just good, you know, because we have enough water typically to produce hay, right? So, but it can be a problem when you have to store it, right? So, and that's basically where my research at University of Maine has focused basically is, okay, what can we do to expand our understanding of hay production so we can develop novel technologies to be able to mitigate these issues while, you know, keeping the profitability and maybe improving the return of investment that producers may have to spend when purchasing preservatives.
Where is it hardest to make hay? Is it in Florida, North Carolina, or Maine?
The areas of the U.S. where you will observe the longest or the longest periods of rainy days, or let me put it in a different way. So the longest periods of no rain. So across the growing season, that's going to be the northeastern U.S. and the northwestern U.S. So you could say in a way, because basically the Southeast may have more precipitation overall per year, but we're going to have less days free of rain. So yeah. That's a constant issue that we have to deal with. So in the Northeast, so especially in the New England area, so it's like being able to find those days where it's actually not going to rain and we can produce hay, right? And there is a healthy demand in hay in the state because we not only have the cattle and small ruminant demand, we also have the horse demand. Mm. And we have among the best prices across the U.S., right? So whenever I'm driving around the state, and it's when we are producing hay, the second cut and the third cut, so a lot of people, you know, are producing small farmers is producing small amounts of hay, but that actually is in Maine our first crop in terms of acreage is hay. Yeah. So and it has been so important in our state history that it's in the state flag. So we have hay scythe actually in our state flag.
Yes. I'm gonna have to go look at that.
Yep. Yes.
You probably also have a pretty short growing season too, right? You're pretty far north.
Yes. So, but we have an abundance of water, but which can be also, a problem. So especially if you're dealing with deep rooted legumes like alfalfa. Mm-hmm. So, but in a way, you know, for that, the water utilization that you see across C3 forages, we actually, we usually not end up in a situation we don't have enough water.
Gotcha.
Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
So a lot of your work has been on preservatives in hay. Hay silage?
Yes, I work with silages and with hay. So there is basically a spectrum of technologies that you can use, across the board. So I will say that basically research seems to point out, and this is with forages, I'm going to remove high moisture corn out of this, I'm going just about to say. So but typically lactic acid bacteria do not ferment in forages above 70% dry matter. Mm-hmm. High moisture corn is a different story. So but basically because of the nutritional profile that you'll find in forages, fermentation is going to stop at around 70% dry matter. So meaning that the technologies like inoculants, that have been quite successful based on lactic acid bacteria in silages, they do not tend to transition very well with hay that is baled between 70 to 82% or 75 to 82% dry matter. Mm-hmm. So because basically it's too dry for the lactic acid bacteria to be able to have an activity, especially because hay is not sealed, it's aerobic, right? Mm-hmm. So, and this was speculated as early as the 90s by Dr. Collins, so who was a very famous, who is a very famous hay researcher. So, and basically a few years ago, we conducted a meta-analysis on hay preservatives, and we confirmed Dr. Collins' observation statistically. So with the inoculants that have been used as hay preservatives that are basically mostly based on lactic acid bacteria, those trials that were conducted before 2022, so they failed to be able to reduce their mother losses, and they have very small benefits, very superficial benefits, I will say. So and that doesn't mean that in the future companies may develop other microbes that may be able to perform better in dry conditions in hay. So right now, basically in hay, what that means is that the preservatives that have been proven to be successful, so in the meta-analysis that we conducted, are basically organic acid-based preservatives, right? That's going to include the acids and the buffer acids. So a mixture, blends of these with other types of antimicrobials. So those are going to be like what, statistically speaking, across multiple studies in the whole world, the ones that have shown to improve storage and decrease spoilage in hay that is going to be baled between 70 to 82%.
So under what conditions should we be using hay preservatives? Is that mostly based on dry matter composition then, or are there other considerations that we should be thinking about?
So the easiest to measure in the field is going to be dry matter, right? So typically, the best performance is going to be between 75 to 82% dry matter, right? Because above 82, the hay is going to be decent for most type of bales. So So between 70 and 75, it may be too moist, depending on the concentration of the preservatives being applied, the dose, the rate of application, and also the type of forage. So we recently got a grant from the alfalfa program, so to be able to look into differences in responsiveness between legumes and grasses, because our meta-analysis work seemed to point out that there were differences between these two groups, and basically that indicated that legumes were less responsive to grasses. And we speculated that this was related to buffering capacity. So as we know, this is the reason why also legumes are harder to ensile, right? But in the case of hay, what is we speculate that is occurring is that because legumes have a high buffering capacity and the organic acids are more antimicrobial at a lower pH, meaning that legumes are going to keep a higher pH relative to grasses when treated with organic acids. So that's going to decrease a bit the performance. So, and also legumes are going to tend to be more susceptible to spoilage compared to grasses, as research that Dr. Koblenz conducted has shown. So, and these factors combined, you know, like basically seem to point out that the forage species is a factor. And we're right now conducting a study to develop guidelines of application of preservatives across moisture ranges and also across legume inclusion rates. So to be able to have that information for producers to refine those application doses so we don't over-apply or under-apply depending if we have more grasses or more legumes. So that's what we're working on right now.
Gotcha. Do you have any sneak preview in the short term of if people are trying to make some of those decisions about application rates? Is there any advice you can give them before the research is completed?
So I would prefer to wait until we complete. You know, where right now my students are analyzing the data. So and basically, you know, we will have it ready for next year for ADSA, most likely. You know, we'll be presenting these results. So and basically we will make eventually these available as extension documents so people can use them to be able to refine their use of preservatives. So our speculation is that legumes are going to need a higher application rate relative to grasses to get the same level of preservation, meaning that with legumes right now, you shouldn't underapply, you know? So if you are thinking about saving some money in preservative use, you shouldn't do it with a legume or with a mixture heavy on legumes. So from a nutritional perspective, legumes are like, you know, like a Ferrari, right? You need to take care of them. They will be very fast, very nice cars, but you need to provide them maintenance, right? So, and that's true for legumes across the board, all the way from the agronomic management to the feeding management, right?
Sure. So, high maintenance,
I mean, also with preservatives, yes, right? Yes, yeah.
Is there any evidence that certain types of preservatives may work better or worse on legumes?
So besides the very evident differences that we saw between microbial, so which meaning mostly lactic acid-based inoculants, so versus organic preservatives, so those that difference is very evident, right? With microbial inoculants not being able to perform, at least the ones that were having developed up to the point where we finished the analysis in 2022. So with anorganic acid being effective, right? So among the organic acids, you have different flavors, right? You have acids, pure acids. So you have propionic, acetic. Then you have the buffered organic acids, buffer ammonium propionate, so calcium propionate. So then you have some other antimicrobial compounds that can be added to these formulations like benzoate or sorbate. So our meta-analysis was not able to capture differences between these organic acids. So nothing major between them. So, but we are, as part of this grant that I was telling you about, we are going to be comparing pure propionic acid and ammonium propionate on an apples-to-apples comparison to be able to ascertain if there are differences between these two types of preservatives. So, so because surprisingly, nobody did that trial. You know, you will think that ammonium buffer acids have been available since the 80s, but surprisingly, there was no published trial showing, okay, propionic acid versus ammonium propionate in the same trial, the same field, the same crop, apples to apples. So actually, we don't know if, like, by applying ammonium propionate, you are sacrificing in some way, shape, or form. So But what we speculate is that, so I mentioned you before that when you increase the pH, you're going to have less responsiveness with these organic acids because they become more polar, they don't cross the microbial membrane that easily. While they are in a lower pH, they become more hydrophobic, more apolar, and they can easily cross the membrane of the microbe, killing it. So you will think that, oh, well, if you increase the pH with a buffering, you are going to decrease the antimicrobial activity. And that's something that has been proved, that has been shown in the lab with molds. But the thing is, the ammonium propionate is special because it has an ammonium. And as a lot of people know, when applying anhydrous ammonia in urea, you will get antifungal activity out of ammonia, right? So So then basically that ammonium propionate is special. So, and we are conducting that trial. So we already did year one. So we are going to be doing year two next year. So, and basically once we complete that, then we'll have a sound response. Answer to see if there is actually a difference between these two, right?
It's really interesting when you hear, like, I assumed that research would have been done by now. So it's always kind of fun to realize, like, oh, there's this giant gap that nobody's addressed yet.
Yes, indeed. Also, I was surprised when I realized that nobody compared grasses versus legumes in the same trial, you know, like with the same preservative. So nobody had done that before. Publish at least, right?
Yeah.
So yes. So that was something that is something that we are answering right now. So to be able to optimize preservative use. So because organic acids are the most important preservative for hay. Mm-hmm. So and then basically refining those doses is something that definitely, you know, is to the best interest of all parties, right? And for that we're working with companies basically to be able to work together to be able to develop and improve, you know, the current state of technology use. So everybody wins.
Yeah. Are there other, besides preservatives, obviously something you've studied quite a bit and have a lot of knowledge on, but when we're talking about hay production in these more humid or rainy or wet climates, what other management strategies can hay growers be utilizing to kind of to manage some of that moisture?
Yes. I mean, that's a very important question. Just like silage, preservatives help you. They're like an insurance, but you need to do good. You need to have a good base. You need to have a good management protocols, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Otherwise, the preservatives are not going to save you, right? So sometimes weather is unpredictable, right? Especially with hay, this can be a problem. So, but among the things that are most crucial to do when making hay in a rainy environment, in a humid environment in the eastern US, the northwest US, so is to condition, right? To use a conditioner, that makes a huge difference. So roller conditioners are recommended for legumes because they will result in less leaf losses, while flail conditioners are recommended in grasses. So because they have more abrasion, they will facilitate more moisture loss. So, but the problem with flail conditioners in legumes is that they will result in more leaf losses. And we don't want that, you know, in this case. So another important thing is that if you are in an area that is rainy and humid, is to TED, because TEDing is also going to expedite that rate of drying. So by half a day, more or less, conditioning expedites between 1 to 3 days. So you can get faster drying when you condition. And TEDing is a slightly less stronger effect. You can gain around half a day by TEDing, but in an environment like Maine, for instance, it is crucial. So we usually, like a lot of the times we're making hay, I'm making hay the day before it's going to rain. So like, oh my God, you know, like.
You hope it's the day before, this. Yeah.
Let's try to finish, because you don't only need to finish baling, you need to move the bale to the barn.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Which is the other factor, right? So, but basically, whenever you are in a rainy environment, TEDing is going to be useful. But if you are not in a rainy environment, TEDing can result in leaf losses that are going to basically be more negative. So if you are in a location that basically produces forage by irrigation, right, like in the mm-hmm. case of the western states. So, yes. Otherwise, TEDing is highly recommended too. But conditioning is even a stronger effect than TEDing. So regarding the forage type, so always with legumes. Legumes are slower to dry than grasses. So you need to pay more attention to your legumes, right? Especially the first cut. The first cut is very important. In Maine, for instance, it's going to be extremely hard to make hay out of our first cut. And that's probably going to be true for many locations in the East, right? We're usually going to be making our hay with a second and third cut, especially the third cut. So, but if you're in a location which is not, you know, like right in between all that raining, but you still have rain, so your first cut, that's where the strongest effects of conditioning are going to be observed in the first cut. So you're also keeping a wide swath. So covering 70-80% of the original area is going to be very important. So when you are mowing, right? So because that's also going to help with the drying. So tedding, basically when you're going to ted for grasses, so it's recommended to do it within 24 hours. So for legumes, some people suggest within 4 hours after mowing. So but also other people, and that what I do personally is to wait to the next morning. So when you have the morning dew and basically use the morning dew the next day to be able to minimize leaf losses, right? So that, because that will be the concern of tedding, waiting too much to ted for a legume will be the leaf losses problem, right? They will increase. So yes, I mean, those would be some major factors. So, and the bigger and denser the bales are, the more thorough that you need to be doing your drying. So the recommendation for square bales, for instance, is to basically dry no less than 80 for a small square bale, that this you know, the most common type. But for round bales, you need to increase it to 82%, so no less than 82. So, and for those large rectangular bales that are used for interstate sales, so those are going to require even drier levels. So, but no more dry than 85%. Because beyond 85%, you start having a lot of leaf losses in the field, right? So that's going to be a problem that, for instance, the Western states are going to have. Yeah. So their problem is not going to be having humidity, you know, too much humidity to be able to bale at the right moisture for storage. It's going to be to dry too fast and it becomes too dry and goes above 85% dry matter. And that's going to result in heavy leaf losses, right? So that is why hay management will vary between the location that you are, depending on the weather, you will have a different problem, right?
Yeah.
Modern bacteria create biofilms, and biofilm-related issues are at the core of most culling reasons on modern dairy farms. AHV provides the only program for biofilm management in cows and calves. How much of your herd's potential gets choked out by biofilm each year? To learn more, visit www.ahvint.com/US.
That's really interesting. Is there any, it's hard to imagine here in Iowa because we haven't gotten any appreciable rain, at least in central Iowa, since sometime in August. And we are now in October when we're having this discussion right now. So we're really dry here right now. So this is maybe a little bit hard for me to imagine, but what impact does soil moisture have? Because you're not just, if you're getting that much rain, you're also getting very wet soils that you have to deal with as well. So what impact does soil moisture have on hay production?
A lot. So actually there were studies conducted by the USDA where they determined the major factors that they affected the drying rate. So and soil moisture is right there. So because if the soil is wet, it's going to transfer moisture to the swath. And then that's going to slow down the drying process. So ideally, in an ideal world, you want to your soil to be dry. But in the northeastern US, that sometimes can be difficult. So especially for the second cut and especially for the first cut, right? Yeah. So yes, but basically the major factors are going to expedite the drying rate. First is going to be solar radiation. That's going to be very important. So the second is going to be the vapor pressure difference. So, and then also relative humidity is going to be important. So those are going to be the major factors that are going to determine the drying rate. Yeah. So one thing that I forgot to mention is that about the things that you should do to make sure that you don't have problems with hay spoilage is to store your bales under a roof, right? Protected from the soil moisture too. So they shouldn't be in contact with the soil because the moisture from the soil can ruin a bale that is already dry.
Right.
So producers should put those bales on top of pallets, mm-hmm. and at least cover them with plastic or some kind of roof, right? So mm-hmm. so they don't get wet. So because otherwise, you know, all the effort of drying can be ruined just because we don't protect our bales from moisture during a storage, right? That would be another very important factor that it needs to be taken into consideration.
Well, very good. Before we kind of wrap up and start talking about our big three questions, is there anything else we need to mention or other high points you want to talk about?
So we recently have been working on hay fires. Mm. So we started actually with the most interesting one, like from to diversify our funding sources, which is basically hay rot fires.
Mm.
So because hay rot fires, they will affect traffic, they will affect vehicles, they will have an impact on insurance of vehicles, right?
Yeah.
So, and one the most important highlight that we have of that work so was that we found that actually the highest rates of hay fires per ton produced are going to be in the eastern U.S., so mm. especially around the Massachusetts area. So, and also in the Southeast, like Georgia, Florida, South Carolina. So, which was very interesting, right? So those were the hottest spots.
Mm.
So this is an issue across the whole US. So, and, you know, of course, in the northern states, it's going to be mainly during the growing season. But in the southern states, we didn't find a difference between winter and summer. So because basically the weather conditions are going to be more or less the same. So that's what we speculate, that we don't observe a difference due to weather in the South, but we observe a clear difference in all the other regions in the US due to weather or hay fires, right? So, and we're hoping that soon we're going to do one on barn fires.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right. Well, stay safe.
Yes, yes.
If anybody's interested in learning more about what you're working on and the stuff that you're studying, is there anywhere that they can go to find your work or keep track of what you're working on?
Yes, my group has a website, so you can Google Dairy University of Maine PFAS, so as in polyfluoroalkyl substances, right? PFAS.
Yep.
So we have a website, so that's a website for our group. So it's that our group consists of me and Dr. Glenda Pereira. We work together. So, and basically, right now all our work is there, including our hay work is within that website. So along with our PFAS work too. So that's where you could find information about what we are doing.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Our Yeast 40 Ruminal and Intestinal Double Modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed.
Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face.
Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition.
AgriTrack, leading traction solutions for herd health. Contact us today to boost safety, comfort, and savings for your herd. Invest in the best. Who would your cows choose?
Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd.
Discover Schooler's flexible and reliable dairy feed ingredient solutions to help support your herd's growth and well-being. Schooler is a trusted partner in dairy feed solutions, delivering high-quality feed ingredients when and where you need them. Discover an extensive portfolio of product options to fit your unique rations and cost parameters. Learn more at schooler.com/dairy. That's schooler.com/dairy.
All right. Well, with that, we will move into our three questions that we asked all of our guests. Our first one is, what is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
So that will have to be the Dairy NRC.
Mm.
So yes, yes, yes. And also Journal of Dairy Science, right? So those are going to be resources that I'm going to be checking you know, frequently. Yes.
Yep. Gold standard right there. What is your favorite non-dairy related book or resource?
Yeah, actually, what I read more, even what I just mentioned, is basically the forage resources, right? So regarding books, so The Science of Grass and Agriculture, that's a very important book, right? So that I have read a lot since I was an undergraduate. So very valuable book. So, and regarding forages, Grass and Forage Science, for instance, that's going to be a good journal to refer to, well, forages in my area, like forage conservation, right? So animal feed science and technology. So are going to be good sources for that I use to consult on forage conservation research.
All right. And our last question is, what do you think sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are not successful?
So working a lot, right? So I will say that basically it's there is a lot of material to learn, a lot of angles, right? So you have to not only consider the scientific angles, but there is also human angles, right? Economic angles that need to be considered. So, and also choosing your battles very carefully, right? So you are able to maximize the resources you have in a given location relative to the problems in a given location, right? So those will be, I think, like that my two major messages: work a lot and choose your battles carefully, right? So, yes.
Great advice. All right. Well, Dr. Romero, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great to have a chance to chat with you, and excited to listen to this podcast when it comes out.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Gail. Thanks for having me. And I hope you have a great rest of your day. And thanks for everyone that is listening to this recording. So I welcome any questions. So feel free to send me an email. So I'm glad to help people, you know, whenever is something that is within my area of research. I'm gladly help you with issues related to silage, hay, and PFAS, right? So just send us an email and we will help you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.